Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs and in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. if he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As far as I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the fields each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail? I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. And Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. And thought has laid up in me. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Taketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father! I stretch my hands to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, spit history in hair, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God. Always in the majority, so walk with him and talk with him and work with him and speak together and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
By the time you met Blondon, how big?
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college. And I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the multi-shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it. And it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200. And it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5". So, and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide, approximately, and about 6 foot long, by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now,
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. "No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit." Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She get hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass. She a nigga. Kid. That nigga hurting himself. You from New State.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying,
See, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me.
No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year, one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087, this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off-grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter. You know, some place to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the Multi-Shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it. And it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200. And it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6 foot 5 inches from the peak to the bottom, 6 foot 5 inches. So, and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1 foot 6 inches wide and about 5 foot 3 inches to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long. About 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6 foot 5 to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here. I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes, okay? And I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. But this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide, and now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and you know, then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed, too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light. Lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6 foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually share, sit side by side on this couch, or you can put in another, you could pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheathe it with either 7/16 inch OSB, or plywood. Either one would work. Now, it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction, and then your casters attach to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing, and the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has, this back platform is 2'6" wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1'9" wide platforms that can be raised up, and as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. It takes about 20 2x4s to build this. That's about it. And you're looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down, the door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, can sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4 foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6 foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5'8" tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms, which I'll show you, I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end, or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here, or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end, and you could set up your cooking supplies, and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up, and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you. You've got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news, happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area. You could set these up and people would at least have shelter for, you know, survival until they can get into houses or shelter, bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows. So you got really good light in this. And it's got an excellent sleeping space. It would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people. Okay? And, you know, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, you know, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably, and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and you know, a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't. But they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here, where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand, or sell your crafts or your books, or, you know, whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window, and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there, so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off, a 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just then hide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free, because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride, but it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. You know, there, we could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless, and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people to sleep and, you know, to take care of their basic needs, and that's what this structure is about. So I hope you like this design. It's called the Multi-Shack. You can get the plans for free on my website, simplesolarhomesteading.com. Up at the top, look at Multi-Shack. Now, there is a button there if you would like to donate. Your donations are used by me to design structures like this and build small houses. I work with a lot of homeless people that don't want to be in the system, that want to build their own off-grid cabins and houses and places like that. I help them with designs and building those projects. So any donation, if you can donate, is very appreciated and will help with those projects. All right, folks, I hope you like this project called the Multi-Shack, and have a great day.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well, Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right, today's topic, which we'll bring back many more times, membership housing and membership villages. I ran across, but they have, their business model is membership housing. They set up hostels, which is, you know, if you ever done a lot of traveling, and you stay at a house, a hostel is like real budget traveling. Places that you can stay, lodging that's real, you know, like one hostel I've stayed at two and so far. And one was, you know, pay whatever you feel. Okay. So I stayed at the first one for like one night, and I kicked in $20. You know, I figured, you know, now – the way the hostel was set up, you know, they had bunk beds. The two hostels that I stayed in had bunk beds, no private rooms, but bunk beds, and you're in there with other people. Like the first one I stayed at, they had sort of like a dormitory bunk beds for men and then a dormitory for women, all right, and pay whatever you feel. Plus, if you got up at 7 o'clock in the morning, breakfast was included. So I stayed there just one night the first time I went through there and kicked in $20, you know, because I got in there like 3 o'clock. About 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And I kicked in $20 and, you know, but you can kick in, I could have kicked in $5, that would have been all right, or $105, but I kicked in $20, so that was cool. Now, the next house where I stayed at, they had three type of dorms. They had a men's dorm, a women's dorm, and a co-ed dorm, you know, sleeping arrangement and whatnot. So the first time I went there, I was and I just went where they assigned me. I was in the men's, and then the second time I went there, it was, you know, I was in co-ed, you know, men and women, and I just went to I attended a tiny house retreat up in Vermont. So the female that was in that particular dorm with me, it was a little dorm too, it was just me and her. So, but, you know, they had separate beds, bunk beds and whatnot. So we weren't on the same bunk bed, but we were in the same, just a few feet away from each other. And then, of course, for the showering part, of course, now that's separate. There's no co-ed stuff there. But then they had a place where you can eat and stuff like that. So now that one was, they had a set price. Coming in, it was $40. $40 a day. All right, but the first one I went to, you paid on the way out. So, they could have changed the rules by now. But at that time, you know, you pay on your way out. So, different hostels. But anyway, so I ran across a hostel yesterday, which is pretty successful. They're about 5 or 6, 7 locations now out in California. And their whole business model is basically they're a hostel. I like the way they really laid out the design of their pods, because they're really not bunk beds, but they're pods. And if you stay an entire month, because California is an expensive market, it's something like $700. It all depends on the location, though. But it's membership based, so you buy. So I said, you know what? Let's adopt that. Everything we do is membership based. So we have we're working on membership housing, and then membership villages. So you'll hear more on that as we flush that out this week, and going into next year as well. So let's go to, if I can open up the mic here. Robin, are you there? All right, she might be busy doing something. Well, she usually is doing something. So I'm going to close up her mic. And because she's like 3 hours. She's in a different time zone. Let's see, 309 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. It's Chris. How are you today?
Good morning, Chris. That was a pretty sharp video you sent out either end of last week or the weekend, one of the two.
Yeah, that was my Thursday. I took apart that tiny house that the 13-year-old and the 16-year-old built 4 years ago. And I loaded the material on my pickup truck and drove up to Chicago, bought a trailer, met four people that I'd never met before, and they didn't ever know this material. And that was the people you see in the video. One of them was the videographer. And they built that. Then they got to take it down there on LaSalle Street in Chicago, right in front of City Hall, and put the trusses and everything on it to show that there's no reason to put people in a tent and that's what their plans are. So we were trying to show them that there is an option, and these people can build their own homes because these people just built this one.
Right, that was a pretty impressive. That was a pretty impressive. Now, Chris, for those who didn't see it, where can they go view that video?
Horse Creek Haven on YouTube.
Horse Creek Haven. Okay, let me go there now. On YouTube.
And I've got 40 acres in Florida that we can start building these communities.
Okay. Four. Oh, it's easier to run around on my phone than my laptop. Okay, let's see. Let me go to YouTube on my phone. Let's see. You there? You still there, Chris?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right, let's see. You said Horse Creek. What now? Horse Creek Haven?
Haven.
Okay,
right.
Horse Creek Haven. Let's go to their channel. Okay, here it is. Here it is, right at the top. Horse Creek Haven LLC and LLC and Inc. And if people, you haven't subscribed, then subscribe to all what they have. So people, if you want to check that out, it's pretty just on the thumbnail. First building frame built in front of Chicago City Hall. On the street, and he released that 2 days ago. And you have I can tell it's lighter because you're using steel or aluminum.
Yeah, that's steel framing. That's the material that I make.
Right.
And that material there, I cut every piece of that material. That's why you'll see me on the saw. But I cut all the material, and they built that house in 3.5 hours.
Okay, now, did they built the frame, or they did the innards as well?
No, they just did the frame.
Okay, well, that's still impressive, 3 hours, you know, from scratch.
From scratch, three guys.
In downtown Chicago, no less.
Correct.
Or wherever this was.
It was
a busy.
We started out in a building, and we built the walls, and then I built the jig for the trusses. That took 4.5 minutes to build the first truss, and then it took them 3.5 minutes to build each of the other trusses.
Okay. And we're going to put this on. It's probably already on it, but our Facebook page, which is DIY TV or at Earth Wealth Forest, I just posted it up on there. So this is a very good video to start the week. So three people, 3 hours.
Correct.
And you got a
frame.
And
I cut all the material.
The material was pre-cut, right?
No, I cut all the material.
You cut it on site.
I cut it on site.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even more impressive. Okay. Well, I'm impressed. I'm speechless on this one.
I figured I was talking
impressive.
About it long enough. People needed to see my words.
Yeah, this is impressive. All right, so people to view it, go to Horse Creek Haven, Haven LLC. Just go to Horse Creek Haven, it'll come up. And subscribe. I just subscribed. And where everything they have coming up. All right, let's see. All right, and the title of the video, which is the first one up in rotation, it's just 2 days up there. First building frame built in front of Chicago City Hall on the street. All right, well, there's social proof. Now, I'm not playing this because we're on air, but now who was the lady that you were standing next to with, I guess, the turquoise dress or blue dress? Who was that lady?
That was Dorothy Brown, the city clerk of Chicago.
Okay, all right. Now, Chris, when it comes to, you had three people, what was the skill level of your three?
Well, they had never worked with the material before in their life, and when I showed them how quick it was to build the walls, they wanted to pick up the bottom wall and move it out of the way to build the next one, and I said, no, take this vice grip, and I grabbed the track, and I snapped it to the other track, snapped another one, walked up to the other side, put the track on. I said, now, put your studs right on top of those studs. And I said, well, unsnap this, flip it over, and you put the screw on the backside. And they were shocked on how fast they could frame a wall, and they'd be exactly the same.
Okay. And let's see, what's the so they didn't need any saws, no nails. I guess they were using screw guns or drills?
Yeah, they were half-inch screws that are self-tappers that put that together.
Okay. And, man, all right, very impressive. Now, what would be the out-of-pocket cost? Oh, did you put any sheathing on that frame?
I'm going to go ahead and finish it. I did not put any sheeting on it. I'm going to finish it. They asked me to bring it back completed.
Okay.
In the next few days, I'm going to complete it. And they asked me to. They called me 30 minutes after I left the mayor's office, and I'm pulling out. You know, they're actually videoing. When you see it, can be hauled anywhere. I got a phone call as we went under that underpass, asking me to finish it and come back.
Okay. Now, what was the cost of the on your materials to get the frame up?
I've got $4,000 in it, and that was the frame and the trailer frame. I went to Chicago and bought the trailer frame that morning.
All right, the trailer frame, that's about $4,000 right there, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we paid $2,000 for it.
Okay.
But it wasn't a very good trailer, but it was something that, it was available, and I did, and that was what it was. So,
well, it did the job. It did the job. Yeah, did the job.
But, yeah, that trailer was bought that morning. I met those people that morning, and we unloaded the truck, and it was raining on us, so we pulled it.
You met the three guys who put it up. You walked them through it. You educated them. You met them that morning?
I met them at 10 a.m. in the morning, and at 2:30, we were sitting in front of City Hall, and they were completing it.
Oh, I wish Reba was there to see that one. Well, I'm glad you got up
and,
that.
Reba was involved because it was the people that run the youth program that teach the kids how to do body work. They're the ones that showed up.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, she was in there somewhere. Well, people, I highly recommend this video. I just posted it on our Facebook page. Well, go on Go to YouTube and punch into the search engine there, Horse Creek Haven LLC, or just Horse Creek Haven. It'll pop up, and it's the first video that's going to pop up. It's been up there 2 days, and it's titled First Building Frame Built in front of Chicago City Hall on the street. And the content of the video is, and it's, I'm seeing it, you're driving it on the street, and it looks pretty sturdy. Nothing's falling apart, while you're driving it on the street. You know, in the street you got bumps and that type thing. So, all right, well, congratulations, Chris, on that. Very, very impressive. Now, what's the deal on this 40 acres you were talking about?
Yeah, I've got, I think it's 41 acres. It's in Florida in the northern part there that we can utilize and start building a community on.
Okay. Now, you know what? There's a – hold it. Did I post it? Let me see if I posted, because I just read of a community. Let me go read it. And I'm going to send, let me find it. Somebody just put over 4 acres, a tiny house community in Georgia. But, yeah, I'm going to send this to you, Chris. I think I posted on our Facebook page. Let me read it. It's titled, this comes from the Sun, U.S. Sun. It says, red tape, hold on, let me send it to you first. Wait a minute. They built 60 tiny homes on a little bit over 4 acres, but the city won't sign off on final approval. And that's the second story I've read like that.
You know what?
In the last couple of days.
I got an answer to that.
Yeah. What's that, Chris?
I do land patents. And any land that's owned, if you're paying taxes on it, I can get a land patent on it, any size, so it doesn't matter. I'm working on a 3,000-acre parcel in Orlando right now. And with getting the land patent, you'll never pay taxes on it again, and it becomes unrestricted. You can do anything on the property you want to do. So anybody that wants to do that, please reach out.
Now, I'm sure there's a fee on that, because, you know, the government gets a cut on everything.
There is. It's a minimum of $10,000.
Okay.
Like I said, any size land, it doesn't matter. You know, and, of course, it goes up from what it, more work they have to do. But there's a basic price, $10,000. But you can build anything you want on your land at that point, and it's unrestricted. So it's not residential, it's not commercial, it's not industrial, it's unrestricted. And you don't have to pay taxes on it anymore, and they'll never come and take your property from you.
Yeah, I sent you an article in a text. Yeah, get a chance.
Yep.
Yeah, they. And the crazy thing is, the city had been working with them the whole time, but I don't know. Red. Which I call weird. I was surprised they put, well, not really surprised, because that's a lot of houses on. Now, what I was thinking when I first read that article is 60 houses on 4 acres of land. One thing that you have to be careful on, depending on the jurisdiction, is if they label it a subdivision. And if they label it a subdivision, then that's another kettle of fish. I try to stick with what they allow me to do from the outset. Let's see if Robin popped back in yet. Let's see here. Okay, Robin, did you pop back in? Okay. All right, she's probably busy, as she always is, doing something in the background, because she runs other programs as well.
And I have an idea about, doing tours and stuff.
Right.
I could bring this house down there, set it up on the 4 acres, have an office so that someone can stay there and actually and be able to do tours anytime you schedule it.
Okay, yeah, let's talk tomorrow morning. Hit me up early. You still go on Clubhouse? Because, man, they reconfigured Clubhouse.
I'm not on Clubhouse still at all.
Oh, you're not? All right. Yeah, I cut way back on Clubhouse. And then, well, just call me direct on the phone. Nine o'clock your time.
I can do that.
Yeah, call me 9 o'clock my time direct, and then we'll go with that. Okay. All right. Well, man, that videos like that, you'll be operating at what's his name, Randy Jones's levels.
Yeah, that's the thing. See, I want to be able to show people that what their capabilities are, not knowing what to do. And
that's what about tomorrow. Everything that you just said, because basically what you did in front of City Hall, that's really, you can't go wrong with that business model. Yeah.
It's everything we talked about.
Right, because that's all Randy Jones does is he does that, well, he does it like three to five times a day. But you did it right, but he does that in a warehouse. But you did that downtown Chicago. So, man, Exton said, call me at 9 your time tomorrow. That's 10 my time. Then we'll get that set up.
Okay, bro.
Okay.
Send me the link to the show tonight, to your radio show tonight. Send me the link to the radio show tonight.
Let me update on that. All right, we didn't do a show last week. We're taking probably October off because we have two projects here in Florida for this. No, one for this and one for the first, not September, November.
Okay.
So I'll fix tomorrow morning. Okay, let me see if I got boots on the ground because if we kept on doing that show, then I've got to learn new names and all that and now let me learn everybody's name. They know me, and you know we got a core group.
We did
one online, but it wasn't rated. It was like I moved this to sick, but today we did it at the regular time. Meetings are like I got everybody's number, so I'll break all that down to you tomorrow morning though. But when we and you have an audio app on that station, I'll let you know.
Okay.
And we did four shows.
You might be able to be, I had a radio station that it started. They offered to syndicate what we broadcast, and
right.
There are 150 national radio stations. So
okay.
Maybe your broadcast, we can get broadcasted out across the nation.
All right. Okay. Robin. Okay. People, once again, go. Chris, that video was more inspiring than Tiny Hoops.
Well, I was hoping that people would be inspired to see.
I'm just thinking about personally, because like Randy Jones, he's doing it out of a warehouse, okay, and that's fine. That works, but so the ghost kid, you by doing it downtown in an urban area, it's. Walked by, drove by, have never seen that before. So the three guys who participated, Man, the word of mouth that you're going to get back off of that.
Yeah, I definitely put their names in there. They're standing there at the back of the trailer downtown. And I wanted to give them credit for what they did. Because they, when the one guy looked at me and said, and he was, I told him to leave that 6-foot wall there because we're building a 14-foot truss. I said, leave that 6-foot wall on the ground. Let's build a 10-foot wall. We laid it right next to it, and I said, now, give me a mark at 7 feet. He gave me a mark. All I did was make two measurements, and I made the trusses. I took a tape measure out, made two marks, or two measurements, and that's how high the truss was and how where the center was. And I went and cut the material for it, and they sat there and had it assembled in under 4.5 minutes, and that's making the material and everything. So I cut it all. They installed it. You see me walking around. I only bent down twice. Because that was when I made the measurements. But for them, for me to design a truss like that so quickly, right on the ground, they were just amazed with it. They were like, this is too easy. And I said, yes, and it'll only get easier.
Matter of fact, let me see. How long is this video? Wait a minute. All right, hold on. Let me get it back on my phone. Let me see. The video is okay. Horse Creek Haven. Oh, it's only a 3-minute video. That's not long at all. What I shall do, let me see, because we got plenty of time here. We got about over 30 minutes. Let's see. Let me get something motivational. Let me see if I can get the audio off of that. What am I trying to do? Okay. Oh, I know what I wanted to do. My phone's running slow here. Wait a minute. Oh, no, my laptop, rather. Okay, let me see. Let me see if we can get that audio off of that. So, oh, man, I got to. Well, let's see what Steve Harvey has to say. We'll be right back.
Jesus. I'd have had some things happen to me, man. President Obama's transition team. I was getting off a plane one day. Assistant called and said, Steve, this is President Obama's transition.
Two things are going to happen. There's going to be a lesson and there's going to be a blessing. Every failure is a lesson and a blessing. Every failure, there is a lesson and a blessing. Let me tell you something. You know how many mistakes I done made? Last January, I hosted Miss Universe. What you laughing at? Why is your ass laughing? And you still laughing. I made this mistake in 89 countries. Now here's the way God works. I'll tell you how crazy this is. On my vision board, the part you don't see, because I have Another list. I have one. I can't show you this because it's not going to show up. But I have a morning gratitude prayer. And you can't see it. But this is everything I wake up before I talk to my wife. I thank God for about 64 things before I ask him for anything. Then after that, it's about another 50 things that I'm asking him for. With all I have, I got about 50 things that I'm asking for. One of the things on my list that I asked God for was to increase my global persona. I want to increase my global persona. I want my message, my motivational speaking, to go global, worldwide. I want to share with more people how to become successful and teach it to them real simple. See, I ain't saying nothing heavy today. If you don't understand that beat, something wrong with you. You ain't gonna make it. Thanks for coming. Because you're super slow if you ain't getting my time. Because I ain't no brilliant cat. I just know how to keep it real simple, right? So in asking God to increase my global persona, he made me the first African-American host ever in the history of the Miss Universe pageant. But he didn't stop there. He allowed me to make the biggest mistake ever made on national global television. That mistake, 48 hours later, I was trending so hard on Google and social media, my name in 48 hours had been typed in 4 billion times. In 48 hours. After a week was up, Steve Harvey had been Googled 7 billion times. Wow. I did not appreciate the way God chose to increase my global persona. I didn't like that one at all. I was a little ticked off with God for a minute. Because in truth, what happened was, it wasn't a mistake I made. I just ate it for everybody. See, the teleprompter, I'm a smart guy. I've been on TV a long time. And the new 2015 Miss Universe is? That's what the teleprompter says. The IBF in my ear says, read the next name. We have rehearsed it this way for 3 days. It was only 2 names on the card. They put a third name in the corner, never told me. We had changed. It wasn't going to be no first runner-up. The guy said, read the next name on the card. Hold now. Next name on the card, Miss Columbia. Great job, Steve. Go for the setup to close. I go in the back. I'm chilling. Steve, you killed it. I know. Steve, you good. You're the greatest. Won't he do it? Then all I heard was cussing. I just heard white people in my ear just cussing. What do you mean? That's the wrong name. The guy said, we'll straighten it out tomorrow in the media. I said, no. We straighten it out tonight. I walked back out there on my own. I didn't tell them that the teleprompter was wrong. I didn't tell them that the dude told me to say this in my ear. I didn't tell them that they changed the car from her. I stood there and I ate it. The way my father raised me. Be a man. Go out there and open up. If I'd have blamed the teleprompter, he'd never work in Hollywood again. The director would have been fired and out of work. Cue card lady, her job gone. I got 5 shows. I take this hit. So I took it. Boy, they laughed at me. People I thought was my friends turned on me. They were doing memes on me. Oh, they was black. See, y'all ain't still mad. They talked about me. I got death threats from Columbia. We have triple our security inside of our gates now because of Miss Universe.
Wow.
People was coming by my house, man, taking pictures. Them Colombians was mad. You know, this is the drug cartel. You got to be serious with these people. And they're going to get them wrong. I don't even know Spanish, but I know when I'm getting cussed out. I don't know what punta is, but I was punta so many damn times. I don't know what it is, but I was one. But behind every mistake, every moment of adversity, there's a lesson and a blessing. The lesson was, I learned something that day. From now on, before I do anything, I double check everybody. So that's the lesson. So now, Steve Harvey, I don't care what the teleprompter say, and we're going to talk to some people first. That's the lesson. Here comes the blessing. 4 weeks later, T-Mobile calls. They said, Steve, we want you to do a Super Bowl commercial. They said, we're going to do a spoof on the Miss Universe thing. I said, I'm not doing that, man. I'm sick of that. Then they told me how much they paid. So I went and shot the Super Bowl. I made so much money and charged them so much money for one commercial that it paid for everything I had for 2 years. Then I turn around and now I am part owner of the Miss Universe pageant, Miss Teen USA, and Miss America. Want me to do it?
Okay, that audio, which is from, let me open up Chris's mic. That audio, anyway, go to on YouTube, Horse Creek Haven, H-A-V-E-N, and first building frame built in front of Chicago City Hall on the street. And, well, That whole soundtrack is what, music, Chris? Yeah, Chris is there. Okay, he might be. We have busy people here. Let me see if Robin popped back in. Robin, you there? Or Delmar? All right, busy people in the background. All right, well. All right, well, go check out Chris. I don't know if you're there or Robin somewhere. All right, well, go check out Chris's build. Yeah, man, hey, man, it that whole video is walking the talk. Nobody doubt it. So, all right, people are busy. It's about 9 a.m. where Robin's at. And Chris is doing what he's doing. So on that note, we're going to shut it down for today, Monday, and everybody have a good rest of the day.